The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
History, despite its retching pain, cannot be unlived. But if faced with courage, need not be lived again. Lift up your eyes upon the day breaking for you. Give birth again to the dream. These words from Maya Angelou remind us that we do not need to continue to live our history. It is so good to be with you today, although I wish deeply that we were in person. I'm Reverend Andrew L. Weber, part-time minister at Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, and this morning we are once again keeping our community safe and leaning into technology as we are worshiping online. Thank you for your flexibility. Thank you for showing up. Thank you for showing up when it's so easy not to. And we can still witness to each other's wonderful and beautiful styles. And I see we're on gallery view. So if you have your video off, turn it on for just a moment. Check out that gallery view, wave, say hi. It is so good to see all of you and know that we are with each other. The reality that we are not alone. The reality that you all are worthy of love. It is good to see you. Feel free to keep your videos on or off as you feel comfortable. We begin our service, as congregations are doing across the country, around the globe, by lighting a chalice, the symbol of our faith. So now's the time to go grab your personal chalice, a candle, the chalice app on your phone, your inner flame, the little electric one that you can flip on and off. And let us all kindle our chalices together. As I read these words by Dorothy Day. People say, what is the sense of our small effort? They cannot see that we must lay one brick at a time, take one step at a time. A pebble cast into a pond causes ripples that spread in all directions. Each one of our thoughts, words, and deeds is like that. No one has a right to sit down and feel hopeless. There's too much work to do. And we light our peace lamp each week at Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. And this week, as last week, I ask that you light this in your heart, knowing that that's where we need to start for peace, is in ourselves. I will read the first voice. You would respond with the second. May peace be with us and with all the people of the world. Amen. Again, we are singing This is a great time to use the song as best meets your needs and your desires. If you want to mute and sing aloud, go for it. If you just want to hear the music wash over you, that is okay either. So let us lift our voices, let us lift our spirits for our gathering hymn 95, There Is More Love Somewhere. I have a story for you, but I think I might have to mute because it sounds like I have little ones coming in from sledding right now. So if there's an interruption, it's just like church. This is life. Life happens. Story is adapted from The Star Thrower by Lorraine Eisley. And this is a story that I knew for a very long time before I knew where it came from. And some of you may know it too. There's a story of a person walking along a beach. And he spots in the distance someone walking, also leaning over, picking something up and throwing it. And they can't quite tell what's happening. He sees this other form lean over, throw it out, walk a little, lean over, throw something. And this person walking is thinking, what is that other person doing? And when they meet, they finally see that this other person is picking up starfish and throwing them into the ocean. They say, well, what are you doing? How can you, like, there's so many starfish here. The person says, yeah, well, I'm trying to, make a difference. I'm putting these starfish back where they belong, off of the beach into the ocean. And he says, well, you can't possibly make a difference. They bend over, pick up another starfish and say, it makes a difference to this one, and throws it into the ocean. Makes a difference to this one. We that that's this whole, hopefully, we'll see. The whole service today is going to be a little bit abbreviated. I want you to have time to go out and have fun, to go out and do the work, to stay in and have fun, to stay in and get warm. So there is our story about the star thrower. And we'll talk more about that. And we do, because it's in our order of service, and I like to sing and I want to sing more. We have a children's recessional hymn, Go Now in Peace. No one has to leave. Everyone may stay, but Because you're at home, you may also get up and go anytime you want. If you need a tea or you need to do whatever you need to do and come back. So now we're going to sing, but know that you are always all welcome. I think we'll just sing a cappella one time through. Someday I may feel confident enough to just sing that online. Today's not that day. So I had whole sermon written. I was like, oh, I'm going to talk about Star Trek and the Borg and resistance and how we can make an impact. And then a call went out to clergy to say, come to Minneapolis. We need you. We need your presence. And it came out, I had heard about it right before Sunday last week. And so when we were talking about Horton Hears a Who and how we need to stand up for those who can't be heard, so often I preach to myself. And after that service, I thought, you know what? I can take a trip. I can take it. There's actually money available. I can take this trip. We can reschedule our lives a little bit. And so I went. And so rather than talking about Star Trek, I'm going to talk a lot about what happened this past week. Now, for some context, I really like science fiction. You know, I've spoken about Star Wars before. I know we've had a Doctor Who service that these speak to me as people imagining what a future can be. People imagining how can we live together? How might it be in the future? What might our society look like? And Star Trek has this imaginary species called the Borg, and they take over other species. They take them over and they say, resistance to us is futile. We will take you over, we will assimilate you. And that parallel to colonialism, that parallel to a lot of our culture is stark in my mind. And that so many cultures are wiped out, are assimilated, they lose their identity and they become part of this collective. And we've seen that in history. We've seen that and we continue to see that where people say, no, just you're no longer an individual, you're no longer a group. We're gonna assimilate you and resistance is futile. So that's where I was coming from. But then less than 24 hours ago, I was in Minneapolis. And so just know that today's going to be a little different. It's going to be a little rough. Like, this isn't all planned out. Things will just happen. It'll be a little rough. It'll be a little raw. I say that as an introduction because it's the truth. And I returned yesterday from this intense trip. And, you know, this is what resistance looks like because we're talking about resistance and how to resist. And some of what I learned there in the trainings was, you know what? We don't know what's going to happen. We can have a plan. We can say this is what we're going to do, but it might not always go as expected. And you have to be flexible. You have to be, oh, non-anxious. You have to be non-anxious. You have to be in touch with yourself. So this is what the resistance looks like. We had some trainings, talked, learned, and then we were sent, a group of us got on buses. We went to part of town, and we went on patrol. I was like, I don't know what that is. I don't know what that looks like. It was sort of unstructured. You have an hour walk around the streets, up and down, bundle up. It's cold, bundle up. But you know, talk with people who are out there, talk with locals, go into the stores, be visible. If you see ICE, the immigration folks, do not engage. If you see them, make noise. Make noise so that the people who can come to witness and the people who need will go the other direction. And the reason we were doing this, we're making noise, is one of the issues I have with what's happening. For me, it's not about politics. This isn't about politics. This is about human dignity. This is about accountability. And for me, there is no accountability. If you go to your local police station, My police here in Newark, they all have body cams. I'm sure Collegeville does too. You have body cams. It tapes what's happening. This is just one aspect. That does not happen with ICE agents. And so we on patrol, we're meeting other people who are also on patrol, and they're just using their phones as that accountability. That's why we see this phone footage when things go so terribly wrong. Because there are no body cams. There's no accountability, not just the camera, but there's no accountability other place. It's about human dignity. And one of the ironic, sadly ironic things is that we know people of color are being targeted. People who speak a different language than English are being targeted. But included in that, in Minneapolis, are some strong American Indian communities who do not look like they come from Europe. So they are not as pale skinned as we might be, or as I am. And the irony is not lost that American Indians are being targeted. And at a rally, one of their leaders stood up and said, "Look, no one is illegal on stolen lands. And who are you to tell me that I don't belong here, that I'm a domestic terrorist?" Oh, it was tough. And so we were walking up and down the street, and it felt like a battlefield in a very, very strange way. A big city, a normal street with shops. So many of these shops were closed. They were just closed because they could not handle the risk to their workers, the risk to their patrons. So it was a street of closed businesses. Or some of them were open, but the doors were locked or had double doors locked, and they had someone standing there who would let you in if you wanted to shop or come in and then lock it after you. A state of fear. A state of fear occupied. This is an occupied city by an outside power, which I did not fully understand, that the people from ICE are not, they're not locals. They're not there. And this is not local law enforcement. These are people who are coming in, enforcing this deportation, and leaving. They're not known there. And many of these stores which were closed, and many of the churches we were in had signs that said, "Everyone is welcome except federal agents if you do not have a warrant signed by a judge." There's the accountability again. If you go through the right process, come in. If you don't, we don't want you here. The people we interacted with were so happy to have us, so happy to know that there were others around. There were maybe 1,000 ministers who answered this call, who came, who walked around, who connected with people, and they were so happy because they're tired. They're living in fear, they're fatigued. A lady we met on the street corner, she says, "I come out here every day with my whistle and my bullhorn and my hand warmers and my double gloves, and I just watch for ICE vehicles, and I'm on a signal thread, which is a encrypted chat, so that we can be organized and we can let people know where ICE is and what they're doing and how to keep our community and our neighbors safe." Some of my colleagues actually interacted with ICE. I did not, but they saw them, and there was one in particular. And what I'm going to do actually is I'm going to send some links as I'm talking. Feel free to ignore them and look later. Also, if you feel you can look now. That's fine. I'm not offended. But one of my colleagues interacted with ICE, and he was there when four cars pulled up and 12 agents jumped out to surround a pregnant woman with her children going to get groceries. And so what he did was he videotaped, he witnessed. And he talked with some of the ICE agents. He said, "Well, where are your gloves? Because those are young people, and one didn't come out, didn't have gloves on." The young man said, "Well, I forgot when I ran out." And so he was trying to acknowledge the humanity of everyone involved in that, that this is not, it's not dehumanizing of one or the other. It shouldn't be. It's just so tough. Luckily, she had whatever papers she needed to have But she was visibly shaken. And he tried to offer her help, to pray with her. And she said, "No, I need to keep doing what I'm doing. I need to get groceries. I need to go home. It's living our lives." So here's an article about my friend James and his interaction, which you can look at now or later. And at another place, ministers—you may have seen this in the news—that ministers were arrested at the airport, and they went in knowing that they were going to be arrested. Here's that article, and it was definitely for the looks and for the news to see that. It was very kind. The local law enforcement was sort of asking the people getting arrested to stand up and get on a bus. There was no violence there, but it was to make sure that people saw what was happening. People saw that was going on. And I went not wanting to be arrested. I was like, I don't want to engage in anything that may be arrestable actions. And this gives me a further story than the star thrower. And this story comes up in public health a lot, which my wife studies, and I have other friends and colleagues who know public health, and they say, "Oh, there's the star thrower, but do you know about the kittens?" I'm like, "Oh, I don't know about the kittens. Who knows about, does anyone know about the kittens?" So a similar story. Someone at a river sees kittens flowing down the river, and they're like, what is happening? I need to go in. I need to save these kittens. So they start grabbing the kittens, bringing them out of the river. And other people come and they say, "Come, we need to keep saving these kittens." So it's a group of them grabbing these kittens, saving them out of the river. But there's also a need to go upstream to see what's happening, to see where are these kittens coming from. So you can save the stars on the beach, you can save the kittens coming downstream, but who's going to do that work? Someone might have to pause in their saving of the kittens, if they're throwing the starfish, to go see why they're coming in. And I say that this story, not just to pause in the kitten saving and go upstream, but say, there are different tasks for different people. I did not want to be arrested. Others were really gung-ho and said, "I want to get arrested." Some people said, "I can't walk outside. I have mobility issues. Walking around in negative 20 degrees is not something that I can do physically. What can I do?" And we had other witnessing. And this was exciting. This was the organizing. It was happening. People were doing different things. People were witnessing at different areas. We were changing the tide, right? I mean, if you saw the news, 50,000 people is that one of the estimates I saw, bracing this negative 20 to negative 10 degree weather, marching through the streets. Just a huge rally. So much love, so much support. I felt warm, frigid, but warm. And not once did I see any negative things. Nothing. Minnesotans were so Minnesotans, that long ago, they were so loving, so welcoming, so helpful. I was welcomed into someone's house just randomly, and they said, "Oh, do you want hand warmers? Do you want this? Come in, have some food." And I was like, I don't know you. You don't know me." They don't want the harm being done. In the march, of course, there are always signs, positive and negative, saying "ice out, no ice." Some of the more poignant ones were, "stop hurting us." Yeah. And then I step back into my privilege that I can come home. That I'm not in that battle zone in Minneapolis, that I don't have to live this every day, except that there are detentions happening here with just as little accountability. Remember, I talked to you about my friend Stephanie's son-in-law who was detained just in Norristown. This is happening in our community too. And people there told us, they said, "This is Minneapolis is a testing ground. We've seen this before, that it's coming to other places." So there I am, living into my privilege, leaving the pain, the hurt, And then on the plane, hear about one more killing. Another shooting. And I don't think it's useful to get into the discussion about the precise action, like, of where the car was pointed, where the person was facing. Was that a cell phone they were trying to stop? Violence. And the violence is being brought by outsiders. And this is, I want to share, after I heard about this one more shooting, I want to share a prayer from the UUA president, Sophia Betancourt. So let us pray. God of many names and one abundant love, we come with a spirit of gratitude, hearts broken open wide. Thank you for the visible, thriving, insistent power of everyday people that some of us witnessed through frozen lashes, caught up in the swell of humanity on the streets of Minneapolis. Thank you for a labor movement that has long taught us to right-size fear of the oppressor and lean instead into the sacred and unrelenting power of the people. Thank you for faith traditions that are grounded in love of neighbor. A love that calls us to care unflinchingly for one another and to respond when violence comes in all of its forms. On this day, as we once again grieve in horror at the mindless and morally bankrupt murder of yet another observer in South Minneapolis, help us to stay connected to one another as grief and rage, exhaustion and despair make their way through us and through our communities. We know that the egregious use of violence, the deployment of young children as bait, the threatening of our leaders, and the violation of our basic human rights are all tactics to trap us in fear and convince us to believe lies about our own power and own moral responsibility. The cost of such terrorizing tactics are unspeakably high. Help to prepare our resistance for the long haul, inspire our disruption, and keep us connected in these destabilizing times. Keep the strains of protest songs alive in our hearts for the coming weeks, months, and years. No one is getting left behind this time. We will sing together in our till our songs of victory, and our children know themselves to be safe and whole. May it be ever so. Amen, Ashe, and blessed be. I read this prayer, I hear of the violence, and I get to the point where I think, oh, resistance is futile. Nothing I do matters. I mean, I didn't think it was all going to change. Like, oh, we came in, we were the saviors, we were there for 60 hours. But I thought that something was happening. The one starfish, the one march. Right? The one kitten. What impact can I have for a more just, a more peaceful world? Well, I go back again to my trainings. I did learn a lot in the very brief trainings in Minneapolis, in the streets, in the trainings. I have some news. I have some news for us that it is the case that throwing in one starfish, saving one kitten, will not make a big impact. That's the truth. But imagine if all of us did that. Imagine if all of us threw in one starfish. Imagine if all of us saved one kitten. Imagine if, oh, hypothetically, 50,000 people marched in sub-zero temps in Minneapolis, right? And not only that, but there are other people doing the other work that you aren't able or you can't do. I don't want to get arrested. We can't attend all the marches and rallies. We don't have the power to prevent policy and change policy, but there are people who do. There are people who can walk upstream, who can do that other work. Yeah. Sometimes we don't know what we can do. We don't know what change we can create. I'm going to keep sending. Here's another link of the UUA, UU World This is for later when you want to see what can we do? What do we do when we're in community? Here's a quote from Gene Sharp, who I just heard of, here at the Politics of Nonviolent Action. And this is poignant because this quote speaks to the power that the people have to make a more just, a more beloved, more loving community. By themselves, rulers cannot collect taxes, enforce repressive laws and regulations, keep trains running on time, prepare national budgets, direct traffic, manage ports, print money, repair roads, keep markets supplied with food, make steel, build rockets, train the police and army, issue postage stamps, or even milk a cow. People provide these services to the ruler through a variety of organizations and institutions. If people would stop providing these skills, the ruler could not rule. So I come to a place of saying, what do we do? What do we do? There is a strategy. People are organized. We know Community for Change here, Stephanie again in Norristown in that area. There's an organization in Minneapolis. If you want to know more about it, if you want to donate, there's MARCH, MARCH. I forget what the acronym stands for, but you can look that up. Making a difference. But the two takeaways I have, two main, I mean, there's so many takeaways, but the two main takeaways is do not do this work alone. Not only will you have very small impact, but you need to take care of yourself. You need to take care of your community, of someone else. Do not do this work alone. And the second one, oh, I have some math background, so I really like numbers. There's a political science understanding rule that when a certain percentage of the population protests nonviolently, that authoritarian government is likely to fall from power. There's a certain percentage of the population that, when protesting nonviolently, can show that there is not enough support for oppressive, reprehensible governments. And this percentage is 3.5. 3.5% of the population, when protesting nonviolently, will make a difference. That's not much. So I leave you with some questions to spark discussion in our virtual social hour. And I leave you with some quote too. The links are for you. The questions here are for you. What are some everyday things you do to create a more just, more compassionate world? How do you resist injustice in the world through large or small actions? I brought up Stephanie once more. She goes around, she does this patrolling in Norristown, an area. And I also mentioned my sister, who walks kids to school whose parents are too scared to leave their houses. Small, huge actions. Think about what you can do. And I end with this quote attributed, this familiar quote attributed to Margaret Mead. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. Amen. And let us, I'm going to be singing. You may sing if you wish, or just let the music wash over. Step by step, the longest march.
by step, the longest march can be won, can be won. Many stones can form an arch, singly none, and by union what we will can be accomplished still. Drops of water turn a mill, singly none. Step by step, the longest march can be won, can be won. Many stones can form an arch, singly none, and by union what we will can be accomplished still. Drops of water turn a mill, singly none.
Alex Dooley, I'm here on behalf of the CARE team to lead matters of the heart. I would be remiss to not say thank you, Andrew, for that incredible share. That was so special. And I'm glad you went off book this week. I think we all needed it. And I had to stop in the middle of the prayer to write down, lean into the sacred and unrelenting power of the people. And I think that part of how we do that is this time of sharing that we set aside for one another to both witness the really hard things and also still leave room for celebration. And that's how we get through things. So if you would like to share this morning, please raise your physical or virtual hand and our lovely tech team will get you unmuted. Thank you.
I'm Alex Dooley. I'm here on behalf of the CARE team. Alex Dooley, I'm here on behalf of the CARE team.
We are going to just move on to Spirit of Life. And this will be shown on the screen and will be sung by our own Christine Perry.
So thinking about a reflection this week, I came up with a letter from a book of letters that I have called Falling in Love with Being Human by Kai Cheng Tam. She is a Chinese-Canadian transgender woman. And there's one particular letter in this book that really touched me and reminded me a lot of resistance because it's called To a Trans Femme of Color Child from a Trans Femme of Color Ancestor. And I think that marginalized communities can teach us a lot about resistance and how to carry on with joy while resisting. And also thinking about those who have come before us is really important and can be really grounding. So it's a little long, but it's so good. And I couldn't pick one part. I'm sorry. So... to a trans femme of color child from a trans femme of color ancestor. Dearest you, know that you are not alone, never alone. Even in those moments when the world seems to open its mouth to swallow you whole, when the daylight burns with bigotry and the night is full of teeth, know that we are here. An army of fierce femme ghosts stands in your wake. We are bound to you and you to us, bound by something greater than blood, than bone, than flesh, than fluid, something greater than death or disease or the hatred of a million fathers. Bound by the words of a force beyond fire, a sisterhood beyond burning, a beingness they could never wipe out. I call you Deathwalker, World Weaver, she who is summoned, storyteller, curse bringer, blessing maker, they who were chosen by the goddess. You were born to be a healer and a warrior and a pleasure maker, to be a brightly burning azure star. You were born to sing the end of days, the beginning of a new time. Let them come for you with their flaming branches, their hatred and their terror, their laws and their bullets, and their Bibles full of a thousand lies. Let them denounce you in the names of all their false gods. Your divinity is not found in any book. Your divinity comes from within. You have something they could never destroy. We make and remake ourselves and this world, and they fear us because we are the end of theirs. Breathe a new time into being, dearest child. And will your desire, your will and your desire are all that you need. Never surrender to the illusion that you are not enough. You are more than anyone dreamed you could be. Tear down their walls and their rules and their petty false idols. Write me letters in your dreams and tell me how we won. I call you dearly beloved. I call you sister and daughter and wombless mother to a thousand femmes. I call you weird and wise. When you close your eyes, when you weep, when you wonder where to run, call for me. I will be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that. Let us conclude our time, bring our time together. Remember, you can stay for social hour and you can stay for book club, but we're going to sing, then I have our closing words and then announcements. So let us sing One More Step. Extinguish our flames, only the symbolic flames that we have, the flames in our hearts, the flames in our souls, those we keep lit. We keep lit for ourselves, for each other, and for the world. We close with these words from Amy Morgenstern. Blessed are the droplets. For they shall fill the bucket to overflowing. Blessed are they who know there is a bucket, for they should be filled with hope. Blessed are they who can see beyond their lifetimes, for they shall walk in faith that their work will not be in vain. Blessed are we when we know we only appear so small because what we are creating is so big. Blessed are we who are a part of one another. Blessed are we when we give new life and light to others, for we will live more richly ourselves. Blessed be. Amen.